is at least do a little better because we do it at least once a month. Fortunately, the Catholics and Lutherans and the Orthodox Church, they do it every Sunday, and in some cases, every Sunday. So when we come to church this morning, I'm going to eat. Did everybody think like that today? We've gone so far away from that tradition. We've kind of lost the fact that whenever Christians gather, we've always said, look at those folks, they're always eating. So perhaps that old story about children and a show and tell may be true after all. A teacher asked the kids in the class, to bring something from their religious tradition, from their spiritual life. So on the day of the show and tell, boy stood up and said, I'm a Catholic. Here's my crucifix. Then a girl got up and said, I'm a Baptist, and here's my Bible. And John Wesley, a Methodist, said, I'm a Methodist, here's my casserole bowl. Now, we've heard that, and we think that's funny. But perhaps we Methodists have got something right in some sense, because we realize that following Christ, following Jesus, has a lot to do with the fact that we eat together. So today, we have gathered today for a spiritual meal. Of course, I'm sorry there will be no casserole here today. We only get just a piece of bread and not even a teacup of wine. You just get to tincture it. And it has become very symbolic. Yet this goes back to our tradition that when Christians first began following Jesus, they gathered for worship around a meal. They shared a full meal in which they remembered what Christ had done. Now, eating food is something that we all do well because it is something that we can't survive without. And hopefully today, many of you will be at a meal with your moms, if you're fortunate, or perhaps with your wife or your spouse or friends. Because meals, eating together, does something for us, something special. It makes us more open to each other. It helps a conversation to go forward. It helps us to forget perhaps some of the hurts that are around. Meals help us to smile and to be more human. If there's one thing that marked Jesus' life, it was that he was always eating. So perhaps the Pharisees were not wrong when they said, Jesus is a drunk and a glutton. Because they said he was always found whenever there was food to be had. And there were people always around him eating and drinking. So he was accused of being a sinner because so many people surrounded him as he ate. And he seemed to have been drawn to people who were always eating together. This final fish story in the Gospel of John actually is the last miracle of Jesus. If you remember in the Gospel of John, the first miracle was what? Changing water into wine. It overflowed. The vats were running over with the best wine in Galilee. And then in the middle of the Gospel, you have the miracle of the multiplication of bread. A little boy brings two fish and five loaves of bread, and it ends up becoming a feast for 5,000 adults and their families with leftover enough for the next day, he says. And then we come to this final miracle of Jesus. And guess what he's doing? He's multiplying fish like crazy, right? 153, he says. Now, some of you are going to ask, well, what does that mean, Pastor? Why is it so specific? Well, someone has suggested maybe someone did count it one at a time. That may be true. But 153, St. Augustine tells us, is a sum of all the numbers from 1 to 17. He came up with that. He thought 153 is the perfect number. But 153, 153 fish would be a lot of big fish, wouldn't it? It would be a lot of fish. It was huge catch. It almost capsized the boat. It almost tore apart the net. The last miracle of Jesus tells us that when God does something, he doesn't hold back. When God gives us blessings, he pours it on. God's grace is available, enough, plenty for everyone to receive. I think when a church is a real church, it can be a place like that, a place of love, place of sharing, a place where we all receive enough so that we can share that even with strangers. How can we be that church of the 153? How can we be the church where we receive so much grace that we cannot help but share it with our neighbors? I want to suggest to you that this week God spoke to us. God gave us a parable this week. As you saw entering the church this day, you saw that our courtyard maple, silver maple, has become wounded. A huge branch fell. What was interesting was that when it fell, we realized the inner core, the heartwood, had become rotten. It had been dying for years, perhaps. Most maples live around 50 years, although they have found some to live up to 100 years. Because of the danger it poses, the church has decided that the maple will be cut down this week. So after the service, we will have a short prayer outdoors, thanking God for this wonderful tree that has been our companion and friend to many of our children, and the wonderful shade that he has provided. But I think our maple also has another lesson to share with us. That although we thought that the tree was living and we knew that it was coming to its end soon, we didn't realize how its inner core had become dead and it was dying from the inside. We saw the big leaves on the top and it was growing leaves like crazy. And they tell us that trees do that because they need the nutrition, so it puts out more smaller branches to receive. But that, in turn, that makes the top heavier so that when the rain comes or wind blows, it does make the trees break down or collapse and do what it did with our maple in the courtyard. When the heart is gone, the tree is no longer alive. And what has been a friend becomes a danger to us. So we are thankful that Hector, our custodian, was near the tree but escaped uninjured and unhurt. Likewise, when the church loses its heart, we may look great, we may look active, but perhaps we have forgotten where our heart is. And the church no longer provides the spiritual food and the community that people outside expects us to provide. So, what can we do to recover the heart of our lives and our church? I think from the first and the final fish story, we must recognize that all of us have received from God's grace. See, in John's community, they say that there was a struggle going on. They thought only those who were martyrs really mattered in the church, those who were killed for the faith, like Peter. But other disciples who weren't killed, who were just living or witnessing to the faith, were somehow seen as second class. So in the boat, we have the names of Peter, the name of the beloved disciple, and then Nathanael and the twin, who could not believe, Thomas, and then the two sons of Zebedee, who were so filled with anxiety or anger. And then we also have the names of two no-name anonymous disciples. For me, that shows that when Jesus gives the grace, he gives to everyone in the church. And we share that grace, each of us in our different ways. Some of us will become martyrs, will live life of martyrs, but others of us will struggle to share our faith every day in our small way. Some of us will be unknown for our service. Others may have questions like Nathaniel and Thomas. Some of us may be angry and be willing to work for justice like the sons of Zebedee. Yet in all ways, God has blessed each one of us in our different ways. And we become the church, and when we're able to recognize God's grace in each one of us. From the parable of the silver maple, we learn that we must get back to the center, the core of our faith. What is that? To love God, to love each other, and to love ourselves. It isn't easy to love others. It isn't easy to love everyone in our families, is it? Yet that is the challenge that Jesus has given us as a people of God. There's a wonderful passage in Matthew's gospel where Jesus says, when you're on the way to church to worship God and you remember that someone has done something wrong to you or you have some grudge against someone, Jesus says what? Stop. Don't go to church. Don't take your offering. Don't go receive communion. Stop. And do what? And go and become reconciled with that person. Tell them you are sorry, or ask them, do you remember what you did? Or tell them how you've been hurt and ask for forgiveness. Ask God to come into your relationship so that you can be renewed. Because when we don't do that, Jesus says, you're not being forgiven, and you're holding God from forgiving you, and ultimately, you're not forgiving yourself. And when we don't forgive ourselves or others, the power of God that comes through is blocked. We can no longer serve. Our love is only just a semblance of what it truly should be. So Jesus says, stop and go. Become reconciled. Practice the love that you have learned from me. In the front of our bulletin, we read these words, I meet many gentle souls who quilt and embroider, sew and mend broken things. We have a lot of wonderful quilters and sewers in our church. And that's a beautiful way to think about our faith, isn't it? The Lord is close to the brokenhearted and saves those who are crushed in spirit. Hasn't that been your experience? Hasn't God used this community to mend the brokenness of our lives, of our hearts? Hasn't that been your experience that God has used you to help others when they were broken, to bring them to wholeness, to forgiveness and love? This day, as you eat with your families or your loved ones or friends, I pray that you will remember all the wonderful things that people have brought into your life and how we can continue to share and extend the love to others. Our church is also such a place. It has been a place of mending, place of loving and forgiving. I pray that we will continue to remember the core of our faith, that we grow as we love. We are becoming transformed as we learn to forgive. A new tree will mark our resolve to follow Christ at the center of our faith every day, so that Christ can become real in us, in the world around us. So, are you ready to eat? Because God has prepared a feast for us this day. Amen.